Top Shelf Sports Talk. You're hanging out in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
Not going to let it go with our next guest. Not only is he a super agent, but he's a Rochesterian. He's one of us. We claim him as ours. Lee Steinberg stopping by the sports bar once again. My friend, thank you so much for making time for us here. And I know we're going to talk a lot of player safety with you here in a bit. But, man, we're 1 week into the NFL season, and we were talking earlier about just general vibes around teams. Teams that have good vibes versus bad times as they head into week two. I think of a team like the Jets where you still have Haason Reddick not there, holding out, not getting his contract. They lose in the way that they lose to San Francisco. The Browns certainly feel like a team with bad vibes. The Bengals, a team that might have some bad vibes since Ja'Marr Chase didn't get it. You represented a lot of high-profile players through your career. Is that a thing? Does that happen with teams where if a player doesn't necessarily get his, there's bad vibes around a team?
I think that it's a failure on both parties' behalf in that situation, because if you take Haason Reddick, he's aggregated some number of millions of dollars of fines. The fact that it actually went into the regular season is stunning. That era is mostly gone. We don't have rookie holdouts anymore because of the salary cap. And when you have players renegotiating their contracts, it ought to be done quietly behind the scenes. That's the most effective. But when it turns into a full-scale confrontation, people lock into their positions, and it doesn't get better, it gets worse. And the last thing a team needs is a lot of discussion about a player who's not there. What they're looking for is unity, solidarity, team spirit. So it's not a positive.
Lee, we're trying to like always assess blame, but when I look at the Reddick thing, is it just simply about communication? Like, and to me, it seems like a communication breakdown, whether that was the Jets, whether it was the agent. I don't know, and I'm sure you don't know either, but just the importance of communication, part one of the question, and then part two, how would you advise a team, because this doesn't do anybody any good right now where the Jets and Reddick are, how would you advise the team to get out of this situation?
So communication, as you mentioned, would tell you early on that there was going to be a contract confrontation between the team and the player. And then the key would be to start early in the offseason. Now, most veteran contracts are done by comparisons, or what we call comps. So you take players at Reddick's position, his level of performance, you look at statistics, you look at honors, you look at how productive the team is with him, and you try to compare that to other comparable players. And there exists a market which is pretty clear. And so then the only question becomes, where should this player fit into the market? And I think one way to view this is whether or not the salaries in a situation like Reddick are guaranteed. If they are guaranteed, then the team's on the hook if the player performance slides and they have to pay him anyway, whether he's injured or the rest of it. If the money is not guaranteed, then it's only a ceiling on what he can make. It's not a floor. They could cut him at any time. And in that situation, you understand. But this all ought to happen privately behind the scenes. And these discussions need to commence really early in the off season. One thing I used to say in negotiations to try to get some urgency is, let's imagine that we're sitting here And the players have been out of camp for a number of weeks. There are bad headlines in the newspaper. We've got a coach who's upset about the situation. What would your position be in that circumstance? And maybe we can avoid it by putting a sense of urgency into trying to conclude this before it spills over into the season.
Agent Lee Steinberg, our guest in the sports bar, Danger and Battaglia on the Fan Rochester. Lee, you repped Troy Aikman, so you've dealt with Jerry Jones in the past. And I think the flip side to what we're talking about with teams that might have bad vibes, in Dallas, yeah, it took them a little bit of time, and you had some distraction there, but ultimately Dak gets paid, CeeDee Lamb gets paid. You know Micah Parsons is probably going to get his at some point as well. Dealing with Jerry Jones and knowing that he is as in front of it as he is with the media, does it make your job easier, tougher? Do you just know at the end of the day it's going to get done?
Jerry is a really great owner in a business sense, and you can make a rational argument to him, and as long as you've got statistics and to buttress it, he wants to win so badly that he will make a pragmatic deal all the time. Remember that some of the reaction to the Dak Prescott contract was, well, he's certainly not rated as the top quarterback in the league. Why is he getting the top money? But remember that I remember talking to Jerry about Troy Aikman's rookie contract, and he says, but it's so much money. And I said, I guarantee you, Jerry, in 2 years, people will be talking about how Troy is not paid what he should be, and he's underpaid because the market adjusts. So one way to look at it is, if not Dak Prescott, then who would play quarterback for the Cowboys? Because teams that can't make their mind up whether or not a player is a franchise quarterback and someone they can build a team around and can play for 10 to 12 years, then you get a Kirk Cousins type situation where you never have a sense of confidence that this player is the heart of your team. And now we have franchise quarterbacks that are being paid just like and higher than star baseball players and basketball players, but the money's there to justify it. I think if I was in charge of pro football, I would probably make the quarterback contract a outlier and not count it against the cap. Mm.
Lee Steinberg, our guest here in the sports bar. Lee, if you were advising your client, when it comes to player safety, and we have these new guardian caps, and we only had four players in the league, and some could say, I'm surprised there were even four. Considering, like, in Major League Baseball, they tried this out with pitchers, and you had a few. Now nobody wears those today. But Lee, what would be your advice to any player whether or not you should wear one of these?
Concussion is, and the specter of it gave me a crisis of conscience back in the late 80s because I'm representing half the starting quarterbacks. And we would go to teams and ask with quarterbacks with multiple concussions, how many is too many? What's the magic number? When should you consider retirement? And there were no answers. So I started holding concussion and player safety conferences and held the last one at our Super Bowl party in Las Vegas. And the concept of multiple concussions causing proclivity towards Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, premature senility, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and depression is so serious that I advise any player to utilize anything. Now, I've seen a variety of statistics in connection with, like, the Guardian helmet, anywhere from 10% to 33% to 50%. You know, a helmet is not going to stop concussions. It's a collision sport. But if it can make it even marginally safer, I'm all for it.
So, Lee, if we could debate whether or not the NFL truly cares about player safety, they sure make it look like they care about player safety, but you can't debate when a parent whether or not a parent cares about their kid's safety when they're on the field of competition. Why wouldn't this be something that's installed as early as the youth level to normalize it a little bit more if you're playing football?
I think that's a great suggestion. I mean, we've experimented at the collegiate level and at the pro level with not having any hitting during training camp or during practices and saving it all for the games. We're teaching better techniques in terms of blocking and tackling to young people. But you make a good point. There has to be buy-in from, like, the high school federations, the NCAA, and different colleges, and then pro franchises. In other words, it's got to be something the NFLPA pushes, that teams, at the league level, and individual franchises go ahead and do this, because look, the difference between concussion and every other injury is we know that players will have aches and pains when they retire, and at age 40 may have problems picking up their child. It's another thing not to be able to recognize that child. We're talking about the brain, the center of consciousness, memory, what it means to be a sentient human being.
The player safety versus what the league is really about, though, Lee, because I think there are contradictions everywhere here. We're going to give you a guardian cap, but you know what? We want 18 weeks here. We're going to make the kickoff rule different, but you know what? Thursday night football is really important. I know it's really tough for your body to recover, but get out there, guys. I mean, to me, ultimately, I mean, is this just not PR, what they're presenting out here when it comes to player safety? Because ultimately, whatever makes a dollar here is going to rule.
There are some breakthrough techniques, finally, to treat a concussed brain. One's called RTMS, which is magnets against the brain. Another is Nestre biofeedback that's been helpful. But this ought not be an issue that goes into political trading of player safety for anything else. It should be player safety first. Remember that part of the problem is that the athletes themselves tend to be in a state of denial about their physical health. I mean, they grow up from Pop Warner and Little League accepting that injury is part of football. We haven't even talked about the subconcussive hits, which is that every time a lineman hits a lineman at the line of scrimmage, it produces a low-level subconcussive event. So you could have an offensive lineman who played in high school, college, and the pros walk out of the game with 10,000 subconcussive events, none of which have been diagnosed because the player just feels stunned, none of which had been treated, but the aggregate almost certainly does what three knockout blows do.
So, Lee, it sounds like you're doing a lot to champion this cause, and I guess I'm curious as to what the next step is. What is next in making the game truly more safe for its players with these guardian caps?
I think part of it is figuring out a way to not have collisions in training camp and practice, so saving it for the games. Now, that may sound revolutionary, but I guarantee you, all you're watching is the game on the field. You're not watching what they do in practice or in training camp necessarily. And so that would be a key. There are new treatments like hyperbaric oxygen and stem cells and Bimini and Nanovi that all work against internal inflammation that can be helpful. And then, yes, helmetry. It's 10% or 33% doesn't solve the problem, but it can be helpful. So I think that every innovative technology ought to be looked at heavily by the powers that be, players' associations and leagues. And the reason I got so concerned is I still know Troy Aikman. We're still friends. I'm concerned with what the 50-year-old ex-client, what their brain capacity is and their ability to lead a normal life. The NFL has tried things with the concussion protocol, which is least of help. I mean, you have people up in the press box that are looking for impaired players down on the field, and they have people on the sidelines, and they're much more diligent in terms of pulling players from the game. But it's not dominoes or checkers, and at the end of it, it's collision sport.
Lee Steinberg, we could talk to you a long time here, but last one. How often are you on the East Coast? Because we would love to have you do a little stopover in Rochester. You're one of us here, Lee.
Absolutely. I can show my ancestry. I'm going to be east. I've got a new book coming out around the Super Bowl that's called The Comeback, Resilience, Empathy, and What Matters. So I'll probably be touring in February and anything. We'll see about a stop in Rochester.
All right, Lee. Nice. Well, we know we'll at least be talking to you about the new book when we get closer to the release, and really appreciate you giving us some of your time again this afternoon to have an NFL chat with us. This is great.
My pleasure.
You got
Thanks,
it. There
Lee.
He is. Super agent and one of us, Lee Steinberg.
Wow. Those are the type of books I love, right? Like, if he's going to tell stories,
yeah,
what it was like, how these deals went down.
Well, I just love his final point there. Like, why are you a champion for this? Because I'm still friends with these guys. I'm still friends with the players that I represented. I'm still friends with Troy Aikman. And I'm nervous that as he gets older, he's not going to have all of his faculties because of how the game was played then. Why can't we change it and how it's played now? And I already know he's right. Like, the players, that you need somebody to protect the players from themselves, or they're going to see it and they're going to be like, nah, that looks dumb. That looks corny. I don't look good in that. And maybe if it starts at the youth level where it should start.
Well, this would be my challenge to the NFL, because what is the NFL's big initiative? And I'm totally fine with this initiative, by the way.
Flag football.
Right. Flag football. Let's get girls involved. This is outstanding. And there's no big-time contact with it. It's flag football. Why can't the NFL have that sort of initiative when it comes to high school football? If the NFL said, hey, to every league in America, we're going to pay for these. We would like you to wear them. Not everyone would do it, but I know a lot would.
See, the thing that you said was the NFL would say, we're going to pay for this. The NFL ain't going to pay for anything.
No. They pay for flag football.
Yes.
That's because that's helping the sport grow.
Yes.
The football overall,
yes,
grow. But if they're really concerned about player safety.
They're not.
No, they're not.
They're not.
That's why, like, I wanted to point. And Lee, look, he pivoted off of it. But this is the league of contradictions. Player safety, it's important. 18 weeks.
Yeah.
Player safety, it's important. Oh, yeah. The kickoff rule, yeah, we're going to see that with Thursday Night Football coming up. Bills and Dolphins.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But you can't dispute the importance of player safety when you're talking about a player who's 12, 13, 14 years old and mom and dad are on the sideline hoping that the worst thing doesn't happen. I'd say start it young, man. I don't know how they do it, but that's if you want to normalize this, if you want to make it, or let's get the helmet technology to a place where we can really feel comfortable that this is reducing the risk of any sort of long-term brain injury.
If I may, Danger,
yes,
sometimes Wednesdays in the league give us little nuggets because this is the day that players talk about, and you're looking ahead and you're looking back. And one of the storylines out of Arizona after that tough loss, wait a second, Marvin Harrison Jr.? Imagine taking Marvin Harrison Jr. in the second round of your fantasy draft, and wait, he was only targeted three times?
Not only that, I saw a stat. I can't remember who put it. It was in my feed. It listed the top speed of a bunch of wide receivers from Sunday. And there was a massive difference between even a guy like Keenan Allen, his top speed was over 18 miles an hour. Do you know what Marvin Harrison Jr. topped out at?
I'm guessing not 18.
16.3. He was slow.
Yeah, and it could have been the routes that they designed for him. It could have been any number of factors. But that's a storyline in Arizona. Like, wait a second. This, you got to get him the ball. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, Kyler Murray can't see over that line, so.
Well, you're Kyler Murray. You're going to be asked about this, right?
Oh, I want this. Oh, this is going to be good. This can only turn out well. What does Kyler Murray have to say about this?
Sometimes the ball goes to him, but that's not my job. I leave that up to Drew. Drew being Drew Petzig, the offensive coordinator.
Oh, this guy.
That's not my job. I'm not taking that out of context.
That's Drew's job.
That's not my job. Can you imagine Josh Allen? Hey, you only targeted Steph Diggs last week. That's not my job.
I'm telling you what, man.
Wow.
That's a quarterback, obviously, that does not get along.
That is like Kyler
Murray. It's so on brand.
Like, wow.
It's so on brand. You can't coach me. It's not my job. I don't you just know he doesn't agree with what's being coached. Like, just let me do my thing. He's basically, you know, he's like Justin Fields. Like, just let me do my thing. Last year, Justin Fields in Chicago basically threw Luke Getsy under the bus.
All you have to do is say,
I'm being coached too much.
We like Marvin Harrison, and we look forward to him working or whatever it is. And you get off the point.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my job. That's immature. The question isn't about you. It's about Marvin Harrison. And yes, you're the guy delivering the ball. It's not my job.
He's right. It's not his job. His job is to serve you half-price appetizers during happy hour at TGI Fridays. He's really Kyle Murray. He's not Kyler Murray. He's Kyle Murray, and he's here with your half-price apps.
If there's one constant in this world, it's baseball.
Oh, yeah. You can't have Kyler Murray delivering the James Earl Jones.
It's not my job to do that.
Not my job. No. I don't like to talk about myself, but allow me to just give you every accolade that I've received from high school on.
We all work with that person, too. That's not my job. What are you doing? That's not my job.
I guess good luck with that, Arizona. That's the guy you hitched your wagon to. Not that you had a choice, but I mean, it's one thing after
you
the
it.
One thing after the other with this guy.
Yeah,
you got the contract right where we don't want you playing Call of Duty. responding to that with, here's my accolades and here's everything that I've done. Like, doesn't seem like a team guy. Doesn't seem very coachable. Physically small, athletic as hell. Not the dude.
But is he mobile or is he just going to scamper? I mean, there's a difference.
I think he's athletic. I think that's it. I think he's athletic. He can make plays. He can make plays. He can't see over the line, but he can make plays. And I have a handful, just a small handful of friends down in Arizona. And to a person, they're not in on Murray. None of them are fans. Like, we don't like that guy. And it's comments like that. It's like, all right, well, you're just not a likable dude. You're not a good teammate. Not a good teammate. You're throwing your coach under the bus. That's not my job. Get out of here. That gives off a lot of Justin Fields vibes from last year. I remember thinking to myself, Justin Fields and Luke Getsy. I mean, Luke Getsy might not be a good offensive coordinator. That's fine. But to hear a player say, I'm being coached too much, that's you telling me I'm uncoachable.
Well, I just want to see if you target Marvin Harrison three times again. When does Marvin Harrison, even though he's a rookie here, Danger?
Yeah. It should get interesting. We got week two to look forward to, and it gets underway tomorrow night at 8 o'clock in Miami. Here on the Fan Rochester, you'll hear Bills, Dolphins, with our pregame coverage getting underway at 4 o'clock. So an abbreviated version of the Sports Bar tomorrow afternoon. Before we give you that, Gino's got his prediction. He shared it earlier today. We'll get to that. We'll give you the news of the day as the Bills travel south. And we'll take your calls as well. If you want to join us, the number is 866-4326-585-866-4FAN.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.